Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.
How many of us have a valid will? And why is it important to have a will in place, no matter what age we are and what we think we have to leave to someone after we die? Today, I have Peter Bobbin, Principal Lawyer at Coleman Greig Lawyers, to talk about wills, why they're important, and how we go about making one. Welcome, Peter. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Julia.
It used to be often that when people took a big trip overseas, they'd make sure they had their wills in order. And last year, when COVID hit our shores, again, people were focused on their mortality and thought about putting a will in place. But generally, we're pretty bad at putting our last wishes in order, something we don't want to talk about. And more than half the Australian adult population doesn't have a will, and many of them are Gen X and Gen Y. Peter, who should have a will, and when should people think about getting one?
Anybody who has anything, and anybody who wants to ensure that that anything goes where they want it to go should have a will. Now, anything includes not just a house, not just a bank account, but even superannuation. Because sometimes I find that one of the objections to having a will is, well, I don't need one because I don't really have anything. One area that I often point out to people is, well, do you have any superannuation? Oh, they say, yes. Look, I'm only 22 and I've only got a few thousand dollars, but often there's a death benefit, a life insurance benefit associated with that, often in the tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars. So this is why I can actually happily say it's almost every Australian adult should have a will.
So is that when they turn 18?
It's definitely when they turn 18. Because the law really is structured around, it's only an adult who can make a will. Anyone less than 18, well, they would need to go through a whole court process to have a will for their circumstances. But definitely all adults in Australia, it seems to me, should have a will.
So what happens when someone dies without a will?
Well, by and large, chaos. By and large, cost, by and large, confusion, and that adds significantly commonly to the grief that those that are left behind need to sort out and live with. How can I say all of that? Well, where there is no will, then there's a whole range of laws that then come into play. And those laws, depending upon what you have, will then determine who gets what. So we commonly describe someone who dies without a will as having died intestate. This phrase intestate meaning, well, there is no will. And where that happens, then whatever the person owned will then be determined according to a statutory order. And commonly that statutory order will say, and that this, whatever they personally own will go to their spouse. And this actually varies across Australia, I have to say. So in the eastern states, and in my state where I come from, New South Wales, the law is designed such that if a person dies without a will intestate and they have a spouse, then the spouse inherits everything. In Western Australia, that's actually different. In Western Australia, if a person dies intestate, then a certain fixed percentage passes to the spouse, and the balance is then divided between the spouse and the children of the relationship. So this statutory order takes control. Now, if that's what someone wants, that's fine. Then you're making a positive decision to not have a will because they want the statutory order to control things. But I often find that the statutory order may work at first level, but it doesn't work at second levels and third levels. So the whole idea of doing a will is to not only identify who gets what it is that I own, but who's the alternate in case they're not available, and who's the next alternate after them. And in my will, I can also identify who I want to sort things out for me. They're commonly called the executor. If we don't have that, then that's when these chaos and cost and litigation can then come into play when people, and they do this, they fight to take the responsibility of dealing with the deceased person's estate. And I know we've spoken about superannuation in other sections, Julia, but I just want to emphasize here that superannuation is not automatically part of the will. So the will is a very, very important and vital document, but it stands alongside of making sure that people deal with their superannuation in a manner that suits them as well.
Peter, I imagine if you also don't make a will, it probably takes longer for the beneficiaries to get their payouts.
Look, that can be the case, yes. It's not necessarily the case, but it absolutely can be. And in today's world of multiple and blended relationships that for some change over time, it really can cause simply chaos. I mean, it's actually quite possible to have two spouses. And the intestacy rules are actually designed to accommodate a situation where someone may have two spouses. As incredible or as perhaps salacious as that may sound, the absence of a will and relying simply on this concept of intestacy can actually add complexity, time, cost.
Wow. So are off-the-shelf will kits good enough for most people?
Look, I'm a lawyer. How can I answer that?
Truthfully.
Yes. Well, that's a good idea. I often talk about the holy trilogy in financial matters, which is wealth creation, wealth preservation, and wealth distribution. We spend our working lives creating our wealth. We'll seek advice and speak to accountants and lawyers about putting in place plans of actions to preserve that wealth. But it's the third of that holy financial trilogy, wealth distribution, that unfortunately people don't put enough time into, time, energy, effort. And you only get one chance to get it right. So if someone feels that they can do it themselves, and for them, a self-made will is fine, then I encourage it. Go ahead, get it done. But if you want, I suggest just that little bit greater certainty by relying upon a professional who does this for a living, then I'd strongly recommend to speak to a good lawyer who can then craft the will in the way that the person wants. So having one is the most important thing. And if a self-made will is what it takes for someone to get it in place, then I encourage it.
When I talk to friends about wills, the idea of intention often comes up, and there's clearly unintended consequences of getting it wrong in your will. And I guess that's one of the reasons that you would see a lawyer who can perhaps point out something that's their experience, what they've been through. Can you think of some examples where good legal advice might have helped people out of some really sticky situations?
We have Supreme Courts right across Australia. And those Supreme Courts every day are dealing with will-related matters. Contested wills, wills that need interpretation, wills that the construction is not quite as it should be. Every day. It's just so important to have a good, proper will put in place. I mean, I can give the example of my own grandfather. Bless his heart, he wrote his own will. Gee, I would have given him a discount if he'd have asked, but anyway. He wrote his own will, I learned a great deal in life from my grandfather, I have to say. And, well, let me tell you what his will said. His will said, I give, devise, and bequeath. Now, he got that part right because he just copied the will from the stationer's form. And he then said, I give, devise, and bequeath the whole of my estate among my four daughters. Of course, my mother and my aunts. Now, If he'd have stopped there, that would have been good, but he didn't. So first clause said, I give to Vasa bequeath the whole of my estate among my four daughters. And then I give my piano to one grandson, my car to another grandson, my tools to a particular stepson. And then it went on to say, and I give the rest and residue of my estate among my four daughters. Now let's just have a look at what that will said. So what it said in clause one is I give everything between my four daughters. Then in clause two, it said I give certain things to certain people that I no longer have to give away because I already gave it away in the first clause, but I'm going to give it away a second time to certain people who are not the same people in the first clause. And then the third clause says, well, I'm going to give away anything that I haven't given away in clauses one or two, even though I gave it all away in clause one. And then I gave away things I gave away in clause one. In clause two, I'm going to now give it away in clause three. Do you see what I mean? And that's within my own family, I've actually got to admit. Getting the will right is important. Now, yes, it may be simple to do a self-made will, but have you thought through the several permutations? How do you do estate planning? One of the most effective tools that I strongly recommend for anyone to help them do estate planning is blank sheets of paper, a pen, and a bottle of red wine. This is how you do estate planning. I actually recommend don't see a professional, don't go to an accountant, don't go to a lawyer, don't go to a wealth advisor. Do this first. And what is this? Take those pieces of paper and pen, and on the very first page, right at the top, I'm dead. My wife, in my particular case, is alive. My children are alive. And then write down, what do I want to see happen? Have a sip of wine, turn the page. Then write on the next page, my wife has died. My children are alive. I'm alive. What do I want to see happen? Write that down. We're now talking about my wife's will, by the way. Turn the page. Next bit of paper. Oh, have a sip of wine, of course. Next bit of paper. I and my wife have died. What do I want to see happen? Write that down. Sip of wine. Turn the page. Utterly catastrophic situation has occurred in our whole family. In a seriously terrible accident, we hear these things sometimes, has all died. What do I want to see happen? This is now estate planning. Everybody can do it. You just need blank sheets of paper, a pen, and whatever helps you to think through these issues. Glass of wine, a beer, good, strong, hot cup of tea, whatever works for you. And you literally just take the process of killing off people in your immediate family sphere. Some you'll enjoy more than others in that process, but that's how to do estate planning.
What are the basics that you need to consider when making the will?
When you're making a will, you're making a few very important decisions. You're making a decision as to who is to get what from you. You're also making a decision as to who is going to carry out your wishes for you. And there's a couple of other decisions that you can also express in your will. So returning as to who's going to do it for you, what you're doing here is you're choosing who is to be your executor. So you're giving the power to one or more persons whose role will be to make that application to the Supreme Court, to get a grant of probate, and then to use that grant of probate to take control of whatever it is you've spent a lifetime, however short or long that may be, you've spent a lifetime creating value with. And then those very people, the executor or executors, will then deal with everything strictly in accordance with what the will says. And that's that other part of the decision-making process. Who gets what? How much of it do they get? And what form is it? What should it look like? I mean, for example, I might make a gift of the whole of my estate to my wife, but, well, that's going to be quite ineffective if sadly she's passed away before me. Who's next? So I might make a gift of the whole of my estate to my wife and alternately to my children. But, well, do I really want a child of mine who might only be 18 years of age to inherit what could be tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars? This is the thinking process that it's really good to go through with those blank sheets of paper, pen, and that glass of wine or whatever else helps to facilitate the thinking. I can make decisions that just maybe if I've got a child that perhaps say is aged less than 25, they can have an income entitlement. I can give them financial support, but they have no control over the capital until they've reached a particular level of maturity, which I commonly find people choose either age 25 or 30. Why 25 or 30? Well, you've been ripped off in life at least once and you've had your heart broken twice. A little bit more maturity by then.
Peter, when is it that you might engage or suggest that someone engages a financial planner or someone to look at what the estate's valued at and what the consequences, the tax consequences might be of leaving certain things to certain members of a family?
Well, what I advocate is, first of all, do that estate plan and ignore all the taxation and other potential perceived complexities, and prepare that estate plan with that blank sheet of paper, pen and glass of wine, as I say. But once you've done that, then get professional support. Speak to a wealth advisor. Speak to an estate planning trained wealth advisor who will be able to then match that estate plan, which fundamentally is the wishes of what you want to achieve, and they'll match that against what you then help them to understand are the wealth, the assets, the interests that you've built up over a lifetime. And some of those will have differing taxation issues. The family home commonly is exempt from capital gains tax. But, you know, Australia has one of the highest share ownerships in the world nowadays. And plenty of millennials are actually owning small pockets of shares as they've followed the stock exchange. Those shares, well, they do have capital gains tax implications. Death itself is not a tax event per se, but it can lead to taxation. So doing a bit of planning there, and that's where a wealth advisor working co-jointly with perhaps an accountant, but most certainly a lawyer, can then come up with some, taking the estate plan, can then come up with some strategies of dealing with those assets in a way which is most tax efficient.
When do wills typically become complicated?
Look, I have a personal philosophy that none of this area of estate planning is complex. Now, I've had a few people that say to me, I really can't do this because it's all too complex. You know, my most common response is, well, look, it's not complex, it's voluminous. Yes, let's understand that. Let's understand that there's lots of little things that need to be thought through, but it's not complex. Like, that's why I really do advocate, ignore the taxation, ignore how things may be held. Just understand what it is that broadly makes up your investment or wealth profile. Blank sheet of paper, pen, glass of wine, and work out where you would like it to go. Once that plan is in place, take that to the professionals, the wealth advisor, working with the accountant, and most particularly the lawyer, and let them show you how to achieve the objectives of what you want to achieve as expressed in your estate plan.
Yes, I remember how helpful going to a lawyer was for me, because I did find it quite complex, and just the questions that were asked were questions I wouldn't have thought of myself. So I found it a very valuable experience. Peter, if you get married, that voids your current will?
That's correct. Right, universally across Australia, marriage revokes a will that was created prior to marriage. Technically, you can craft a will such that it survives the particular marriage. But by and large, as soon as that marriage happens, any will not expressly done in contemplation of the marriage is actually void and no longer in existence.
What about divorce? Does that have the same consequence?
No, it doesn't. Again, all of these laws do vary in often very only minor ways across Australia. So generally what you'll find is that whereas a marriage revokes the entirety of a will, divorce, once the divorce actually happens, the divorce will cancel only that part of the will that relates to the former married partner. And let me just stress that, because divorce takes time. For example, you actually can't file an application for divorce until, as a couple, you've actually been formally separated for at least 12 months. So there's a period of time when you can't obtain a divorce. And if that will is left in place, you can see where real complexity will then later arise, where a will is in place and a person is legally married and the divorce hasn't happened, though the financial settlement may have occurred. So that's why it can be quite important to not only do the will and have it in place, but also to update it.
And when you say that it only revokes that part of the will of the ex-spouse, what about if the ex-spouse has stepchildren that you've taken care of in that will at that time?
What it does is it the divorce will cancel the divorced person's interest. So if I'm in a second marriage relationship and there are stepchildren of my new married partner, and I may have spent quite a long time being a parent to them, and I may have raised those stepchildren as my own, and I might have quite an affinity to them. The divorce won't cancel that part of the will that relates to them. It will only cancel the gift to my former second partner. But do understand that, of course, because if the nature of that separation, meaning with the separate second partner, meaning that part of the family is now gone from my life, including those stepchildren, then there's a reason why the will needs to be upgraded and updated. Because if the wish is that those what were my former stepchildren no longer receive from my estate, then the mere fact of divorce does not cancel that relationship. If the will says they're to get something, they will, unless I change it.
So, Peter, when should people review their wills? How often?
So there's two answers there. One really should review a will when there's one of those life events have occurred. And those life events really are really bound around changes of relationship. Marriage, divorce, separation, entering a new relationship, children marrying and entering into new relationships. That's another good time to really consider redoing, re-expressing those estate planning wishes. The other time that I suggested people should review a will is, well, once every year. Now, you might say, won't that be a bit costly? Well, no, because really all I'm suggesting here is that, and maybe link it with tax time. If I wrote the will, if I know what's involved in it, if I was part of the process of working with the wealth advisor and the accountant and particularly the lawyer in putting it together, I just recommend, you know, just take that once a year opportunity to sit and think, has anything changed in my life in such a way that I really should redo my will? And if the answer is no, then you've just actually reviewed your will. So two answers there, definitely on a life event, but also give some thought to, I'm not saying go out and employ someone to sit down and re-discuss the whole content, just create that discipline. Often doing it around tax time can be a good thing, of actually sitting and thinking about it, pulling out, have a good read and say, yep, it still says what I want. That's a review and it's a good one.
Peter, is childcare a consideration that you include in your will?
Yeah, very much so, Julia, very, very much. So not only does the will deal with who you're giving the control of your estate, the executors, not only does it deal with who of all of those family members or friends and colleagues or who gets what and how much, but it's also the right place to make statements as to things like who is to be the guardian of young children. I mean, who is to step into your shoes and to make the decision of what school they go to or what socks they wear in going to school. So you can actually use the will to also identify who you'd like to choose to be the guardian. And then once that decision is made, you can then supplement that with how you then structure the gifts under the will so as to particularly make available the financial support, not only for the child, but also for whomever the person's named as a personal guardian, because they just might need a bit of financial assistance if they're going to take on that role of almost in effect replacing a person as a parent. The will can also be a good place to also identify what to do with the body. I mean, legally, the executor is the person who's first primarily responsible to actually deal with the body. And well, there've been court cases, literally court cases over what to do with the body remains. I mean, okay, I understand Michael Hutchins of In Excess fame. My understanding is that he was cremated and there was a fight over who of the family members was going to get his ashes. And ultimately I understand it was resolved that his father got some of those ashes, his mother got some other ashes, and well, his partner at the time, Paula Yates, also got a share of those ashes. So the will can also deal with not merely who the executor is, not merely who gets what and how much and when, but who's going to take care of those young kiddies going forward and decisions about the body.
And Peter, I believe you've got a unique recommendation of how people should structure their estate planning.
Yes, I do, Julia. I sometimes get people that say to me, I don't care about doing a will. What do I care? I'll be dead. And I actually say that's the wrong way to look at estate planning. What I actually say is, do you know who the most important will is? It's my wife's, not mine. I actually encourage people to be selfish. Think about this. The most important will in my life is not mine, it's my wife's. You see, the issue here is what has my wife done such that if anything happens to her, I'm surviving her? Where does it all go? And will I have a financial security? Similarly, for young or not so young adults who have older parents, you know, it's not merely your will that's important, but it's your parents' will. Now, particularly if the parent is in a blended or new relationship. So what I actually encourage, and this particularly addresses those people who say, oh, what do I want to do a will for? What do I care? I'll be dead. Well, just look at, change your perspective and be a bit greedy and ask yourself, well, what if something happens to somebody in my family sphere? How will their death impact on me? What have they done or not done such that their death will impact on me? That's a really very valuable way to look at modern estate planning.
That's very interesting. And actually, that's a good way to look at insurance as well, but that's another topic.
It certainly is.
And Peter, finally, how much should people consider that is reasonable to pay to get their will done professionally?
So the cost of getting a will done, by and large in Australia, should be somewhere around the no less than $800 through to, by and large, somewhere around the $5,000 to $6,000, maybe $7,000. And for some, where there's more involved investment structures, then we can even look at even further sums. So at that $800 range, we're probably looking at someone who is not in a current relationship and they're looking to primarily control the way that their assets and their superannuation is dealt with. So they'll be looking for perhaps their sibling to be their primary beneficiaries, or their parents, or other relatives, or even close friends. We could consider in a fresh new marriage relationship or couple, bona fide domestic couple, or de facto, as it's commonly known, a relationship. They might also fall into that category. And then as we move into people who have may perhaps additional life insurance, superannuation interests, maybe multiple superannuation fund interests, maybe they might own a business or a company or an investment trust, you can see why where there's a bit more involved and more time and level of expertise is really quite important and valuable. And that's where the costs will then, it will climb, but it will climb and be well justified, because I commonly find that getting it prepared by the right person will save all the angst, chaos, cost, and taxation that otherwise arises when there's no plan at all.
Thank you so much for joining us, Peter. It's been a joy talking to you again.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Julia.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au.